Please listen carefully.
Well, hello, universe. Welcome to the Optimist Daily Update. I'm Summers McKay.
And I'm Christy Jansen, and we're part of the team behind the Optimist Daily, making solutions the news. We bring you reader-funded solutions news every day in order to change the tenor of news media, social media, and the direction of your day to make it one focused on solutions.
7 days a week, we publish positive news stories written by award-winning journalists and delivered online to your inbox and through our social channels. And now we are sharing these solutions in a commute-worthy, walk-worthy, home office-worthy, we're gonna do something different today-worthy podcast. Today is Friday, August 21st, 2020. Well, my dear Christy, how are you today?
I'm pretty well, other than I'm locked inside my house with all the windows closed because of the fires that are raging around California. Not in my direct backyard, but they're so ubiquitous that it just is making the air quality pretty awful.
Yes, we are in a similar boat, although at my house this morning, there was just a super heavy, dense fog, which actually prevented the smoke from kind of penetrating and getting in. So we opened our doors and windows for a glorious 30 minutes before we then had to shut everything down. I mentioned yesterday that my cousin had lost her house in the Santa Cruz Mountains, and more pictures and more stories are coming through from just the utter devastation up there. So I'm kind of sad today. I spent most of my day yesterday working on a GoFundMe for her because she owned an at-home business where she imported bags from Kenya, artisan handcrafted bags from Kenya, and provided income for women in Kenya. And the lion's share of her inventory was warehoused at her home. They also were farmers, and so they farmed on their land. And the primary source of their income all was based around their homestead, which is now gone. So I am feeling not even my usual dig deep summers optimistic. I am just kind of blue. So I think I definitely need the Optimist Daily to lift me up, and I definitely need something different to lift me up. So what do you have for us today?
Well, today we are doing something really, really special. And for all of our followers and listeners who are in the Colorado area, we're bringing somebody in from Colorado, a little out of state here, which is fantastic.
Hey, Colorado. I'm a Colorado girl from the start.
Yeah, I'm looking right here at a letter from one of our emissaries who's in Lakewood, Colorado. And so I just thought I'd mention that since Ethan Steinberg, who is our special guest for today. Yes, we're doing something different. We're bringing in a voice from out in the positive solution world. Ethan Steinberg is the CEO of Propagate Ventures, which is a company that focuses in investing in agroforestry projects around the country. And we'll hear more about that. We wrote about Propagate a few weeks ago, and we talked about it here on the Optimist Daily Update. And we reached out to him, and he has agreed to let us spend a few minutes this morning with him, hearing from him directly on agroforestry, on a regenerative economy, and why soil health is so important. He calls himself a soil health geek. He was a startup growth expert before that, and he's been focused on turning ideas into reality, which is something that I truly appreciate. He's not just a dreamer, he's also a doer. He has helped scale ventures domestically and internationally in industries such as the sharing economy, consumer packaged goods, and B Corp businesses. He holds a bachelor's in social justice and sustainability from Miami University, and he is a board member at the Association for Temperate Agroforestry, which we'll find out what that is, in addition to managing propagate.org, which is a curated news hub on the regenerative economy. He was born on Earth Day, and he has been passionate about the environment for his entire life. So he's enjoyed living at the intersection of regeneration and technology, which is something that the Optimist Daily also likes to celebrate. So, Ethan, welcome to the Optimist Daily Update. How are you this morning?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me, and good morning. It's a pleasure to be here.
So speaking of, you know, we've got lots of forest fires raging all over our state. But talking about forests, why don't you tell us a little bit about what agroforestry is and why this is an important aspect in building a regenerative world?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great question. Agroforestry, maybe one of the ways to think about it is either bringing the agriculture to the forest or bringing the forest to the agricultural field. What that means is and where Propagate really focuses is integrating fruit, nut, and timber trees in row with an existing agricultural operation. So to help picture this a little bit, let's say you're walking through a field, and let's say it's wheat or corn, and every 100 feet, you would have a row of trees. And in between those rows of trees, in the alleys, you'd have your corn or wheat or soy. What we're talking about here and the regenerative components and why there's such a beneficial economic and ecological benefit to what we're talking about here is incorporating some more diversity from an economic perspective, because we have fruits, nuts, or timber that provide a little bit more diversity and from a revenue generation perspective in terms of what crops are being grown on our land, taking advantage of that vertical space, as well as some of the benefit on the ecological side. We all know trees are pretty spectacular. One of the things I love to reflect on is trees are the pages of our books. They're the walls of our homes. And you can sort of imagine the depth that into which trees are sort of part of our day-to-day life. So from that perspective, not only do they provide some inspiration, they provide some economic value, they also provide ecological value in carbon sequestration and water retention, increased biodiversity. And back to your point earlier about the fires that are currently happening, there's always some hope that agroforestry systems can provide some risk mitigation to some of these challenges that we face.
I guess when you have sort of the monocultures, whether it's a monoculture of trees, they have, you know, vast fields of lemon trees, for example, which we have often in our backyard here in Central California, or you have vast fields of corn or soybeans or any single crop, then you're vulnerable to whatever pests, and you denude the soil of all of those kinds of nutrients, which would, if you had a more balanced system of different biodiverse species growing alongside, it would help to rebuild the soil or keep the soil from getting completely stripped of those particular nutrients that that particular species uses, right? So it keeps the soil healthier, and healthy soil sequesters moisture, which will help in times of drought, and also maybe keeping it from being dry and the tinder, which has erupted right now into awful fires all over the place.
So I have a question to add the description, Ethan, that you just gave. Agroforestry is a pretty disruptive concept, right? Obviously, if we think about the farmlands of America or the vast farmlands that I live nearby, this is a pretty disruptive idea. And I imagine that it hasn't been simple changing people's behavior or changing the agricultural industry's behavior or perception of the value. And you and Christy have articulated all the benefits of it. What has it been like for you out in the world talking about this to farmers?
Yeah, thank you for asking that. It's really the central point of our work is, and it's one of the more exciting things I get to do on day to day, is I get to learn from and work with farmers who are really the stewards of our land. And, you know, oftentimes our conversations, while there's a depth of knowledge of understanding of the health of the soil and the nutrients that are required to make for a thriving landscape, and our farmers really understand that and have an extraordinary amount of knowledge on that topic, I think what's important to recognize is our farmers are also running a business. So oftentimes our discussions are of an economic nature. We're talking about the question of profitability. So when we sit down with a farmer, oftentimes our discussions are, if we're going to integrate trees, maybe they're fruits or nuts or timber, what does that mean for the cash flow of our business? And over what period of time is that, a few years, or does that extend into a 20-year time frame? Do these trees have an effect on the return of the business? What are the costs? What are the revenues? And what does that mean over that period of time for the economic viability of the farm business? And that's generally where our conversations start. And there's plenty of that can be built upon that as the foundational part of the discussion. propagate, where we focus is we have a analytics and project development platform that we use to analyze things like costs and revenues, yield projections, labor assumptions. And these are effectively the economic insights that any farmer or landowner would need to confidently make a decision around agroforestry. So a lot of this is about removing the risks, mm-hmm. whether they're risks around what are the operational components, what are the business components, and the financial components. We want to sort of remove those barriers to entry so that our farmers, our landowners, and investors who hope to get involved in this as an impact investment can have some clarity around how to make this really viable and do well and do good at the same time.
Yeah. So I'm imagining when you add a row of trees periodically throughout a field, you're going to be changing the whole way you harvest it, the whole way you are treating that plot of land, right? It's going to have different kinds of tractors if you use tractors, right? How do you harvest that kind of field when you can't just do the mindless mega harvesters? Are most of your growers that you're working with, are they more smaller holders or are they large farms? What's the size frame that you're working in?
I'd say on average, the average farm acreage is about 300 acres. We work with farms that are smaller than that and farms that are much larger than that. I mean, like the total range of acreage are farms in the 50 acre size all the way through to the 3,000 acre size and growing. So geography plays a role in farm acreage. Where most of our farms are on the East Coast. So geographically, were you to look at a map, you can think Burlington, Vermont, down to Washington, D.C., over to Nashville, Tennessee, and back north. And that's generally the geographic scope of where we focus. Now we're starting to expand a little bit more into the Southeast, the Carolinas and Georgia, and then more into the Midwest. And that looks like Wisconsin, Illinois, Minnesota, Iowa, Missouri. And so you can start to get a picture of where that looks like. Honestly, a big component of that is the climate plays a role here. So annual rainfall. Uh-huh. So back to the economic components here, as we start moving further west, as you're aware, in California, water is a much more hotly debated topic in California than it is, say, in New York, for example. Mm-hmm. And that plays a role, particularly when our farmers have to pay for water because of the amount of rainfall they get throughout the year. When it comes to establishing a tree system, trees do require water, as do most things, and younger trees require a little bit more water. We want to be able to make sure that there's enough rainfall to establish our trees so that they get to a point of cash flow break even. So
yeah. So you kind of have to have a longer time frame, and that's part of what the security that you're offering is that you have some financing to get them through the first few years. Because the trees are going to take some time to grow in order to produce. I mean, even if it's a fruit tree or a nut tree, right? I don't know what the shortest period of time before you actually start getting revenue from that investment.
Yeah, we work with a range of different crops to help mitigate this as a challenge. You know, for example, timber can be a 15-year or longer investment. Mm-hmm. And to sort of work backwards in time on the continuum of crops here, a tree nut, chestnut is a crop we work pretty closely with. That's looking more at like the 8 to 10 year window. A tree fruit is going to look more, and that's like an apple, pear, peach, going to look more like the 5 to 8 year window. And then we also work with shrub fruits, like a blueberry or a black currant or an elderberry. And that's going to look more to like the 3 to 4 year window. So you can start to get a picture of the different timelines for these crops. What we focus on is diversifying an agroforestry investment portfolio across different geographies and crop types to help create some balance around when revenues are generated and to create some incentive at the farm gate for when those crops are producing at a mature level. And as investors get engaged, that there's some return generated in the shorter term, the medium term, and the long term, mm-hmm. so that the portfolio has a much more holistic approach.
I think that a holistic approach is so essential to building any kind of sustainable or regenerative business that will go on for more than just the short term. One of my favorite quotes, and I think in your bio, you said you were born on Earth Day, which is a very good day to be born on. My son is born on April 19th, which is just the day before. But one of my favorite quotes is from the founder of Earth Day, Gaylord Nelson. He has said that the economy is really a fully owned subsidiary of the environment. It's not the other way around, because economies live within the ecosystems that they grow up in. And especially when you're dealing with something like agriculture, you can't ignore the state of the environment and the ecosystems that you're building in. So I see this kind of as a flipping of the classical economic models that usually fail to recognize things like the environment or the living conditions in many of these economic models. They sort of take for granted that it's going to be fine. Your approach seems to sort of have flipped that, and you have to actually build the soil from the soil up in order to have positive economic business models. Is that how you look at the agroforestry movement?
Absolutely. I appreciate you bringing that up. The way that we talk about it in our office, which is, I would say, sort of building on the foundation that you just outlined, it's a lot about the management of energy flows. In agriculture, if we think from like a macro level here, the energy flow is solar energy into photosynthesis, which one of the lovely things that trees do is they take that solar energy, they photosynthesize. That photosynthesis creates some carbon sequestration, which a tree turns into three things: its root system, its trunk, and its branches. Now, in the root system, how it happens is sequestered through the tree and pumped through the root system into the soil, into something called root exudates. Now, these are basically carbon turned into sugars that the roots of the tree pumps those sugars into the soil. And that's what attracts some of the microbial and fungal life that really creates some of that soil health and that sort of vigor in the soil, that thriving ecosystem underground that moves water and carbon and nitrogen and phosphorus and that whole soil food web that moves things through the soil that creates really lovely soil that looks like a really dense and a yummy chocolate cake that dark brown.
So it's sort of like a light and fluffy chocolate cake as opposed to a really dry brownie.
Exactly.
The brick brownie you can't hardly eat.
That's right. And so we're always talking about, let's go find some chocolate cake in our office. I mean, the more, in our opinion, the soil can look like that, we have more clarity that there's a lot of soil organic matter and there's a lot of health. From an economic perspective, the reason I gave that whole explanation is what we want to be able to clearly do is tie the economic model to photosynthesis, and that the vigor of the economics has much more to do with the ability of us, of our systems to photosynthesize, less so than the other way around. The photosynthetic process and nature's process is one that will run its course on its own. And so what we need to be able to more efficiently do is build our human model, which is the economic model, to something that is essentially out of our control. Photosynthesis will take its place, nature will run its course, and we need to adapt more effectively our human-based model, the economics, to that. To your point about agriculture, there's such a seasonal component here. Look, I would love to say, like, let's make things photosynthesize faster and let's have it operate in like the exponential cycle. If we can do that, great. I think there's a longer, maybe a whole other podcast we should have about whether or not that can happen. But
yeah, but you have to have a kind of that symbiosis or that homeostatic approach where there's balance that gets brought in. So yes, the tree takes 8 years or 10 years or 15 years to grow and be able to use. But in the meantime, it's providing shade for the crops that are on the ground. And you've got some cover crops, which are also rooting into the soil and helping to bring more roots and attract more beneficial microbes and fungal there, which will then turn back to help the tree grow even bigger. So it has more shade. And then you can the balance that yep. you are bringing in to the whole model, which is it has a holistic. So you're not just talking about this year's crops. You're talking about 15 years from now, the crops that you're growing. In the meantime, those crops are helping to shade or support the things that are growing in that you can harvest on an annual basis or a seasonal basis.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, the nice thing about agroforestry, and I think many components of the regenerative agriculture movement, is we've had the opportunity to learn from ancient and indigenous wisdom. And we're really at an inflection point today that it's important for us to be more aware of the ancient and indigenous wisdom that has, over the sort of course of human history, has much more effectively worked with ecosystems and managed those energy flows. And you know, I think in some degree, my role is if I do my job well, I'm just translating that wisdom into modern day, into a modern day society. There's just so much there, and great things take time, and trees are part of that. So as soon as they get planted, there's that ecological value because the root systems are permanent and they're bringing water up to the topsoil from deeper in the soil, sequestering carbon. And over time, they're going to create a lot of economic value, whether that's something like an apple or something like a 2x4.
Right.
I want to jump in. I have a question about, even though there is a tremendous length of time involved, and it is sort of stay the long course, right? That stakeholder capitalism that we've talked about. Ethan, do you have any particular success stories? You know, any farmers who've done really well, who are sort of your marquee, like poster child of the agroforestry and of Propagate Ventures?
Sure, sure. You know, we have about 20 farms that we work with at the moment and growing. I'm happy to share some stories of farms that we love. I mean, we love any and all agroforestry system, to be honest. There are farmers in the U.S. that have been at this for much longer than Propagate's been in existence, and that have been sort of the pioneer species of this. You know, we've learned from them and are kind of bringing our take to it. Some of the farms that we work with, one that I like talking about is a group in, they're outside of Ithaca, New York. Their main crop is apple, which they use for cider production. So they've got an alley cropping system of apples and asparagus, and their apples, they did peaches as well. So asparagus earlier in the year, and then apples in an alley crop system that end up into a hard cider. So they're value adding those apples into a hard cider. They've been around for about 10 years. Now they're young farmers. Their model's really interesting, and they're in sort of the heart of New York's wine region. They're a winner on the cider production side, and they produce some really, really yummy cider. Now, one of the things we're working on with them is thinking about their needs as their cider business grows and expanding their apple production. They're definitely like a highlight story because their farm is more developed and it's been around for a little bit longer. So thinking through their example, now on the total opposite side, we've got a younger farm. These are a grass-fed beef producer out in Maryland that are planting timber.
You know, I hadn't even thought about that it could also be not just agricultural farmers, but also, you know,
animal farmers.
Yeah, animal farmers. That's fantastic. That's really fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So this is a practice called silvopasture. And so while we've got an amazing, amazing case study about the folks up in Ithaca, what they're doing with apples, when they bring turkeys into their system as well, the turkeys, what they do is they kill the pest cycle on the apples. So the turkeys eat the larvae that end up being the pests for next year's apple.
Brilliant.
I know that you've probably seen, and we have, and we've featured stories about apricot farms. That's the biggest little farm. And that's exactly the approach that they took, right? Where they were bringing in animals that were going to eat the pests. Anyway, it was all of that symbiotic kind of whole systems approach to farming, and animals are a big part of that.
We do everything we can to plan that into our agroforestry systems. So we have these biodiversity buffers that will do things like attract various predatory insects. They essentially hunt for the pests of some of our crops. You know, one of the lovely things about nature, if you think about walking through like a nature preserve, for example, if you kind of look out as you're walking through a natural area, in every direction you look, there's extraordinary amount of biodiversity.
Yeah. You know, we interviewed Nick Haddad. He focuses on butterflies. He's a conservation biologist. And he was talking about how when you plant trees or you plant sort of bushes in the middle of different agricultural expanses, it brings in the pollinators. It brings in the bugs that actually are going to help you to pollinate your crops in a more productive way. So I think that getting that balance right, that's probably one of the ways that your farmers can raise their productivity. And even though the efficiencies might go down, the productivity might go up. We're getting to the end of this time that we have together, but I don't know if that's something you found. And then I have one more question after you answer this one.
Yeah, I have a quick note for you on that one. There's a clear dollar value to biodiversity. Bats, for example, have a multi-million value add to the agricultural industry. Mm. One of the things that we always find it interesting to do as we're walking around farms is try to be as silent as possible. And if you can hear, for example, birds chirping, you know there's some value there. And what's really eerie to us sometimes if we walk around farmland and it's just dead silent, you can't hear that biodiversity. And it's weird. It's one of those passion points where we're walking around farm, like, oh, here's something that's a clear and present opportunity that has an economic number associated to it, the sort of association of biodiversity and what that can mean for creating value on farms.
Yeah, that's,
I love that description of the silence of these farmlands, because that's so perfectly captures what it is like living next to a great big industrial agricultural farmland area.
Sure.
The absence of sound really suggests like that even though it is a productive farm, it's actually a really barren land.
Yeah.
Anyway, Christy, I know you had one more question, and Ethan, I've loved this conversation. Mostly I've just listened in, but you guys are amazing. What's going to take us home?
Well, I just want to bring it back to the people, because there's a lot of our listeners are not farmers. Some of them probably are, but I wonder if there's anything that you want the normal person to think about when they're thinking about how they get their food, or, you know, just getting back in touch with where it's coming from. So even if they aren't farmers, is there any way that people can help support this kind of biodiverse regenerative approach to our food systems?
Yeah, it's an awesome question and one that I think is really important. You know, I don't hold the expectation that everybody should be managing a farm. You know, I think that's a little much to ask, but I think one of the easiest ways to get plugged in is to know who near you locally is producing your food. Oftentimes, you know, if I think about walking around the grocery store, I'm reading labels and I'm thinking about what's in all the food and like who is behind the product that I'm buying. I mean, I think the easiest thing here is ask that same question of the food that's on your table. You know, for example, I'm in Colorado and some of our team is in New York. In Colorado, there's some really, really brilliant ranchers out here who are extraordinary stewards of the land. So one of the things that I like to do is find an opportunity to reach out and to learn from them and to buy their products. I eat meat. So what I like to do from that is find the folks that are rotational grazing, that are holistic managers of their land, that are ranching in a very holistic way, that I know their practices have positive ecological benefit. And if that means I get a really delicious cut of lamb or steak that I get to share with my family and friends over dinner, it's a nice opportunity to talk about the benefit of what's on our table and how that got to our table. And you know, I'm lucky, I'm part of the industry, so I can talk to the nuances and the details of what it takes to manage these systems. But in short, my vote would be just educate yourself and reach out to the folks locally that are producing your food and do everything in your power to source food locally and get to know your farmers. I think most farmers would love to share with you what they're doing, and to create that connection is really important.
That's a great answer, Ethan. It's really been wonderful speaking with you this morning, and we just are very excited to see how Propagate grows and how you help to bring soil health into the main conversation and all of the benefits that brings, including carbon sequestration, but also biodiversity and healthier food and just getting back into that sense of where it all comes from, because I think that is so important. It's a Buddhist technique that I've been taught. When you have a meal, is sort of think about all the people who brought that to you, where the water came from, where the soil and the microbes that helped to grow it. And you can really have a more joyful experience when you consume food that way, because you just really appreciate it.
Absolutely. And I appreciate that recap. I think it's a really lovely and appropriate way to put that together. And I truly appreciate you for having me on the podcast. It's been a pleasure to dive into these topics with you.
Well, you guys, this has been amazing to listen to. And I hope our listeners really enjoyed the first time we are diving into a live interview. I know that if you are interested in the story about Propagate Ventures, Amelia will surely put it into the show notes for this episode. I just want to really quickly do a rundown of what else today is available on the OptimistDaily.com's headlines. We have a great story about Oxford doctors concluding honey may be the best for treating colds. I think every parent knows that one. More pro sports teams are offering up their empty arenas for voting. This is our Election 2020 and Your Vote, Your Voice Matters series. Dr. Spot, meet the robot dog testing coronavirus patients. A guide to all the zero waste stores near you. We have talked about zero waste stores and where to find them and how to support them. Thought Leader Series, The 19th Amendment and Why Intersectionality Can't Wait. Seventh Generation takes sustainability to a new level with plastic-free packaging. Hooray! And oh my gosh, Christy, I feel like there's just so many. Train Your Brain, 9 Ways to Improve Focus. Clearly, I will need that today. Prolong your lifespan with these two exercising tips. And nuns decide to turn damaged convent into a flood-preventing urban wetland.
Urban wetlands, that is another reason that you need things like trees and nature embedded in cities. We learned that lesson pretty bad in Houston.
Yeah. Big time, right?
Big time, yeah.
And last but not least, doctors set to trial experimental treatment for abdominal cancer patients. Hey guys, everybody, thank you for listening to the Optimist Daily Update this fabulous Friday. I hope you all have a good weekend. And over the weekend, we promise we will share positive solution-based stories with ideas on how you can participate in this changing world and ensure it is changed for the good. We promise to cover the current events with accuracy, legitimate sources, and brilliant people like Ethan Steinberg, and offer you the information needed most to chart new paths for all of us.
And please consider becoming an emissary on theoptimistdaily.com if you're not already one. And for only $5 a month, you can support the reader-funded independent journalism found here. Be a part of the solution-changing consciousness that addresses our world's biggest challenges with a problem-solving mindset. Let's keep The Optimist Daily free for everyone who needs it, supported by everyone who can. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. We'll be back on Monday with more Optimist Daily solutions.